Did you catch that story from the news? It almost got buried in this heavy news cycle. All the bad news. I mean, that could have been worse, but something good happened there. And we need to rejoice in that. To me, that was almost a greater testimony to, that March on Washington 50 years ago than a lot of people talking in front of the Lincoln Memorial. An example of the things that Martin Luther King Jr. was really preaching. But I have to wonder, what is it that led Antoinette Tufts to do what she did? Think about it for a moment. I don't have a lot of answers, so I'm going to open it up just a little bit right now for anybody. What do you think led that woman to be able to respond in the way she did? I mean, how many of us would allow fear to shut us up in a situation like that? Or worse? What was it? Anyone? What? She loved God. And she loved the boy. Others. Maybe. Other thoughts? She saw him as one of God's children. Anyone else? Well, where does that come from, though? I mean, you know, that's something pretty deep. You know, we can have love for somebody, but I mean, that's... what was it? And I don't have the answer, folks, necessarily, but what was it? What do you think was it that led her to do what she did? The Spirit of God? Yeah. I like that. Well, you know, one of the first things she did was what? She started praying for him. I just started praying for him. You know, how often that's a very simple thing to do. You know, we sometimes tell somebody when they're going through a tough time, we say, I'm praying for you. And sometimes that's almost felt as a truism, you know. But not. What was it? You know, as we pray for someone else, prayer kind of changes us, doesn't it? Prayer has a twofold, a manyfold effect upon God's people when they open themselves up to God. You know, there's a number of things I thought. You know, anybody else have something to share about this? Yeah, Steve. She let God take control. Yeah. I think in some ways this is a better thing. Now, you may disagree with me, and that's okay. This is a better way of handling situations like this than trying to arm everyone or arm certain people. I'm not sure that the only way to stop a bad man with a gun is a good man with a gun. Because sometimes that changes the whole situation. Sometimes that escalates things. Sometimes that just makes things worse. I don't know, you know, where our country is facing into this bit with Syria. You know, of course, it's on a larger scale, and I'm just a pastor here. I'm not a world leader or anything like that. But I just kind of have to wonder if that's, what kind of effect is that going to have of, do you know, having a bomb and run or something in Syria, if that's really going to make things better or make them worse. I don't know. Sometimes it does. We definitely want to have God involved. Now let me bring that back into what I just read from this letter to the Hebrews, which in some ways sounds like just a bunch of scattered thoughts, encouragements. But I think there's some unifying things in there. It starts out by saying, encouraging those people. And I think the people that it was written to were going through a tough time. But it says to them, let mutual love continue. Now the word there, we know, hopefully some of us know, that there are many different words for love in the language that the Bible was written in. And this particular use of love is the word, and I think we've heard it before, because it happens to be a city in eastern Pennsylvania. Anyone? The biggest city in eastern Pennsylvania. What? Philadelphia. That's the word. Philadelphia. Now, it's not agape love, God kind of love. It's brotherly or siblingly love. Philadelphia. Let this continue. And the encouragement is towards the fellowship. You know, so if these words are for us, you know, today, let Philadelphia continue. Brotherly, sisterly love continue. Let it flow. Let it move. Don't hold it back. But then it goes on and says, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. And there I want to bring out another Greek word, the language that this was originally written in. The word hospitality to strangers is the word philo. You remember in Philadelphia, philo is a word for love. So philoxenia. Love for stranger. Now perhaps you've heard the opposite of that, which is the word xenophobia, which is what? Fear of strangers, or fear of what's strange. Here it is, do not neglect to have a love for the stranger, which is what hospitality, it's translated as hospitality here. Did not neglect to show hospitality for strangers. And then it goes on, and the first thing that comes to mind is an episode in the life of Abraham, where Abraham, and I think I preached on this a number of weeks ago, was sitting outside his tent by the oaks of Mamre, and along came some strangers. And he compelled them. He said, come on, come into my tent, let me feed you and show you hospitality. And that's probably in the back of the mind here. So do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Now, some things we need to have in mind, you know, probably for these people that the writer of Hebrews was writing to, you know, they didn't live in a time when they had Super 8s and Motel 6s, where the light is always on. They lived in a time where, you know, as you were doing traveling, having a place to stay was pretty important. You recall kind of a foundational story that we remember at Christmas time. There was a young couple, and the woman was pregnant, and there was no room in Bethlehem there in the inn. And I kind of have to wonder, you know, maybe there was some providence in that. For I kind of wonder if, you know, I don't think inns were necessarily a place where a pregnant woman would have had a very safe place to sleep and be. So maybe it was actually a better thing that there was room found in a stable rather than in an inn. Anyway, but in, you know, actually how probably the church started there in the place, and some scholars think it was in this Lycos Valley in what is today Turkey, that these letters to the Hebrews there, what this probably was referring to, the church started by people welcoming in some strangers who were bearers of good news. And the good news just sort of sprouted from that as people opened their doors and showed hospitality. You know, and you never know. You show hospitality and there might be kind of missionaries. There might be messengers of God. There might be angels. That's what an angel is, you know, a messenger of God. Now back to Antoinette Tuff. You know, in opening her door, I don't think she opened it to an angel. It was kind of anything but. However, this stranger that was kind of thrust upon her was not exactly an enemy either. He's a very troubled man. Young man, 20 years old. Someone who hadn't taken his medication. Someone who had a story to tell. And I sort of like what she did. You know, it starts out, I just started praying for him. And then, what did she do? She told her story. She told her story. You know, as I hear her story, I hear a lot of echoes of my own story. Here was a woman who had gone through a period, her 33-year marriage had ended badly. He didn't die, there's divorce. And she stumbled through a time of, you know, trying to pick herself up, starting a new business. She wasn't a teacher. She was a kind of the bookkeeper of that school. She told her story. And with her story, she assured him that, you know, God is at work. Maybe she didn't use those words, but she was showing with her own story that God wasn't finished with her, that there was more to it than that. You know, I like the rest of this this passage that I read as well, because it calls us to step out of our comfort zones. You know, those in prison we tend to put into a box. But the call is to step outside the box and reach out to people who are strange to us, or people who are in prison for their faith, or people who are being tortured, people who are being abused. I'm sure she, like me, hears that word about marriage. And I got to tell you, folks, people who've gone through a divorce, they're not thinking lowly of marriage. Think of it pretty high. And this whole bit about keeping your lives free from the love of money is really about trying to put life into perspective. That God will provide. God does provide a way. Right, Megan? God provides a way. Dwelling with the promise of God that I will never leave you or forsake you. Coming to the point of being able to say, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. Because what can anyone do to me? I want to close with another video about hospitality, more in the fiction realm. In this video, well, it's taken from the movie Les Miserables. And that book by Victor Hugo begins by telling the story, a little bit of the story of a bishop of a town in France called Muriel, Dean. Okay. And his name is Monseigneur Muriel. And the main character of the book, Les Miserables, is Jean Valjean, who has spent many years in prison and has just been released to a living hell, that he remains chained even though released, that he will always be a con in the eyes of the law and others. And in desperation, for he cannot find, has not been able to find a job or get anything, he comes to the home of the Bishop of Muriel and is welcomed in. The housekeeper there is not too sure about this fellow, but he is welcomed in by the bishop, who feeds him and gives him a place to stay. Of course, that night, Jean Valjean leans back in what he has had to do for most of his time, and he steals in the middle of the night. But there is more to the story, and it's actually this episode that fuels the rest of the book, Les Miserables.